Hi, welcome to the Brick Filmers Guild podcast, hosted by us, the Four Monkeys. On this podcast, we had the extreme pleasure of chatting with Michael Hickox of Michael Hickox Films. Michael is from the state of Ohio and is the first Brick Filmer to reach 1 million subscribers on YouTube. His premier channel was created in July of 2009. It has over 100 videos with approximately 850 million views and over 1.2 million subscribers. This podcast is sponsored by Stop Motion Explosion. Have you ever wanted to make your own brick animation but don't know where to start? Stop Motion Explosion is a complete animation kit perfect for anyone who wants to start making their own brick films. Their kit includes a high-definition camera, easy-to-use software for Mac and Windows computers, a huge collection of sound effects, free video tutorials, and much more. Use the promo code GUILD30, that's GUILD30, to get 30% off your animation kit order and fast free shipping at stopmotionexplosion.com. If you would like to help support our podcast, you can do so by becoming a Patreon supporter. Get podcast at least a week before anyone else and other perks only available to our Patreon supporters. So, without further ado, here's our conversation with Michael. Good morning, Michael. Thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's really exciting to be speaking with the most subscribed brick filmer on YouTube. It's amazing. A million subscribers you hit on October 19th, 2017. And that is just so amazing. Congratulations.
You're going to be you're in a crowd of one right now, but within probably a week or two, there'll be two of you.
Forrest is right behind you.
Well, yeah. Forrest, a few hundred thousand.
Yeah.
But that's amazing. Enjoy the next few weeks of being by yourself, but the two of you definitely deserve it.
It's an amazing accomplishment. Must be surreal, I would think.
Yeah, and I mean, it's one of those deals where, I mean, you know, even my channel, I branded it with my name. I never thought it would go anywhere. So, you know, a million subscribers, that's, you know, it still's, you know, mind-boggling to me.
I bet. Your thank you video for that was really wonderful and very informative. It was nice getting to see you, seeing some of your earlier work and behind the scenes. It was a very humble and very really nice video. We enjoyed watching that.
Yeah, okay.
And cool, the plaque that you got both from Lego and from the company that you're working with.
You're partnered with. Who is that?
Well, It was Collective Digital. Now I think it's Studio 71. Uh-huh. But there's I guess you'd identify them as like a marketing agency. I know they're partnered with other names like Retin and Link and, you know, other YouTube channels. But it's sort of just a third party, I don't want to say middleman, but, you know, it's a representative that works through YouTube, manages myself and some others. You know, so it's good to see that, you know, they were actually first to recognize the million subscribers. They had the trend figured out. So, you know, the day I hit a million, I pretty much had that custom made plaque. And then, you know, YouTube sends the gold play buttons that I want to say that took about 2 months or so to get, but still well worth the wait.
Yeah, that's actually the first time I've seen one of those. So it was really nice that you know, showed that in the video. I thought it was really, really cool.
Never thought I'd get it.
Well, we won't.
No, but we can live vicariously through other brick filmers. That's okay. We're good with that. So how did you learn stop motion and why did you decide to go with Lego?
Well, I guess my story starts in 2005, just as a birthday gift. I got a digital camera. I guess that sort of shows my age, right? I'm 27. So back in 2005, I was probably, you know, 13, 14. I got a camera, I just started screwing around with it, and I was checking out some of the software it came with. I was always interested in stop motion, but never had like an outlet to do it. I never had a camera or a computer. And so I just started making stop motion videos with people. Like you'd stand still, move forward, take a picture, move forward, take a picture, and you could like walk across the screen without moving your legs. Or we'd do like the invisible go-kart, that sort of thing. I tried doing different things, like I tried to make videos with action figures, but they couldn't stand on their own. They couldn't move on their own. And then I started doing with Lego. That was always a kid hobby of mine. And Lego characters, they snapped together. They could balance well. They could stand. And so it was just sort of an evolution of to find the best, media to work with. And that eventually resulted in Lego. And I was fortunate enough that that was the same time YouTube was coming out. I think YouTube started 2005. I joined them in 2007, so I already had a little bit of experience. And then it was just the, momentum driven by viewers that kept me into stop motion and wanting to improve. And eventually, it kind of launched into a career.
Excellent. So, that's the 2007 one. That's your first YouTube channel. Is that correct?
Yeah. Now, I always joke around, too. That was another one, badged with my name. I never thought it would go anywhere. But that was just, little screwing around videos. I put music on it that wasn't mine. There's, copyright infringement around. But, I've never made any pennies off of that. But that was sort of the driving factor. Was I had an old channel with some content I couldn't monetize on. And then I decided in 2009 to make the new channel, the Michael Hickox Films channel, so I could try to take, advantage financially.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a great idea.
Definitely.
What's actually funny too, though, was the catalyst for me making the new channel. Back in the day, YouTube, it was quite a bit different. If you went on the homepage, there were a select number of featured videos that were seen to the world. And I was one of those one time. It was a recreation of the old Mario video game, the scrolling game.
Right.
And so I made a Lego Mario video. It was featured on the homepage. And just overnight, I went from getting about 300 views a day to 750,000 overnight.
Wow.
So YouTube actually came to me. When I logged on, there was a little pop-up bubble. And it just said, hey, you've got a popular video. We can make a deal on this and both make money. And I'm like, I don't own Lego. I don't own Mario. I don't own the music. I can't make a deal. So that happened a couple times. And I'm like, okay, if they ask again to make a deal, I better be able to say yes. So that's when I made the new channel and tried to do everything, clean.
Oh, okay. Well, some of the things I did love on the old channel, it's definitely your both your Lego arcade one and two.
Yeah.
Love those.
Oh,
they really
captured
the game. And Kim's quite the Galaga player.
Galaga
so.
And Centipede. No, it was mind-blowing watching those because you felt like you were watching the real game. You captured it perfectly. So it brings back a lot of really fun childhood memories for me playing those games. I loved them so much.
And I think that was about when I tried to take it a little more serious and step up. Obviously, the early stuff isn't going to be the same quality. But I think right in there was when I was trying to make a push for it and, even trying to push for the accuracy of the games. That's, I'm just always trying to improve.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you play those games? Or did you just study the games? Because you nailed them.
I played a lot of them and I had Centipede, for example. I had this, 3D modern in quotes. It was probably late 90s. But I had a 3D modern version of Centipede and then it would have the classics as add-ons to the game. So I played all of those, either directly or indirectly. But once again, I guess that shows my age. I'm 27. I'm probably on the older side currently for brick animators.
Yeah, not quite as old as us.
we're just slightly older than
us. No, I understand. I'm just saying a lot of people starting out are probably 14, 15, and then they realize that, hey, they're in a group of adults, not kids.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So.
Yeah. We're a little older than your average brick foamer. There's a few others out there that are
just slightly.
Just slightly. Me, not you. You're a youngster.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, your first channel ended up having, I think, around 56 million views or so, and then your new channel
still has 24,000 subscribers, which is still a load.
But your main channel has over 100 videos, 850 million views. So you'll eventually hit that billion mark.
And now 1.2 million subscribers.
Yeah, it's just insane numbers. So congratulations there.
Yeah, thanks.
One of the things I noticed that was really neat, unique with you and cool is you kind of have a personal branding that is really consistent. You don't really go off the tracks too much. You kind of stay with a nice formula, which I really grew to like when I was watching your videos. Your title shots at the beginning. Some of them had animation. Some were just a picture, and those were cool. I also liked how you fade to black at the end a lot of, in most of them. It just has your signature all over it, and
you have certain trademarks. Certain trademarks, which are really
and a few
nice
have changed over the years. A few have changed. You used to use the blue base plates as your sky, and you've switched over from that. But you know, after seeing them after so many videos, it was almost whoa, he changed. so you could have even probably gotten away with not making that change, but
Was sure that something, did somebody suggest that to you, or was that just something you decided it was time to?
You're saying for the sky background specifically?
Right.
I guess I don't remember what the start was. I know we did like a Minecraft video in the last, you know, say 2 years. And we tried to, I think that was actually the main push. The base plates, they never looked the best, but I always tried to keep it where everything you see is pure Lego. You know, like it's just toys. There's no special effects or add-ons. Which I guess not to derail, but the only special effect I really do is the masking where you cut out a support to make an object float. I really try not to do like the addition of material. So I guess that would go as the sky as well.
Right.
But I just figured, hey, the blue looks better. It's more, you know, uniform. It's more realistic. And it's still just a poster board. So I guess no foul.
Christ, right. Yeah.
But yeah, I think the main thing was it was just like, we did a specific video where we tried to do a Minecraft video where the sky had like a gradient where it's like yellow on the horizon and blue up top. So we actually did a printout of that. And then we decided that was so much easier because, you know, the poster board you just prop up and it's big. You don't have to prop up individual base plates and hook them together and, you know, cover the seams, things like that. So it was just, just evolution over time.
Right.
Yeah.
It's growing.
Well, yeah. I liked because I watched them from the beginning all the way up to the modern ones. And it was just this nice progression. You know, some folks out there might say you haven't changed a lot. It's like, no, I watched them all. there was these changes and just was gradually getting better as you went. You know, when you spend as much time animating as you obviously do in order to get these videos done, you get better. I took 2 years where I was a basically professional brick filmer working for Oyo Sports, and over those 2 years I got a lot better.
Yeah.
So practice makes perfect, and you are moving in that direction. So awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, see, that's sort of the other thing too, was starting out, I guess people always ask me, you know, oh, what can I do to improve, or what do you suggest for beginners? My thing was always, I'd make a video and there was always something I didn't like about it. Like, oh, I saw my reflection in that building, or there was too much light flicker, or the camera was drifting. So each time I was trying to focus on one area of improvement, and eventually I'd run out of things and I'd have to start over again. Like, okay, I thought I fixed the light, but let's be a little pickier this time. You know, things like that.
Right.
What's funny is while I'm still thinking of it, we were talking of the sky base plates briefly. You watched all the videos. Did you realize that there are a couple mistakes, too? In the Christmas video, for example, I don't know how it happened, but I used a green base plate as the sky instead of the blue in one of the scenes.
I don't think I noticed that.
And it's funny because I just had blue background for the sky. And, you know, you move the set or whatever, you disassemble it. And then I was doing another shot. I just grabbed a base plate, put it up. Oops, it's green.
Gonna have to go back and watch that now.
I'll have to look at that.
But no, it's just funny because I think it's even in the thumbnail of the video.
Oh,
it's a green sky.
That's
and
so
Santa's
funny.
In front of it.
Ah, you did that on purpose.
Green for Christmas. It was meant to be.
So no, I know, but it's just funny because it's, you know, it goes into the areas of improvement. I did that once and I'll try and never do it again.
There you go. Have you ever taken any courses or classes on video or video production, film, stop motion, anything like that?
No, not a single thing. When I started out, I was in like, say, eighth grade. And then when I started getting popular, it was during high school years. And I guess I was in I live east of Cleveland, Ohio, in a rural community. Our school never had much money. So we had like a computing class, but it wasn't like, you know, I couldn't take film or anything in high school. And then I actually went to college for mechanical engineering. So I guess there's like project aspects that carry over, but, you know, no skill set necessarily.
And do you have a degree in engineering?
Yes. Bachelor of Science in Mechanical Engineering.
That's awesome.
Nice.
You got a good backup.
What's funny is I actually graduated top of my class, and my degree sits there unused, at least for the moment.
But you know what? And you're probably making more money than most of the people that actually are continued in that field. That's funny.
Even if it's break even, it's, you know, it's good to be your own boss.
Definitely.
I can attest to that. Well, that's awesome. Where do you typically brick film?
Well, I guess I recently purchased my own house and property. Historically, it was always in my parents' basement, just to, you know, not that I need to tell you guys, but, you know, you need to get away from natural light and try to control every aspect you can. So the basement was the most, you know, sterile, controlled environment. And then I worked at a friend's house for a little while in his basement. And then currently it's my own basement. So I work from home, and I guess, you know, it technically is a business write-off.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's
excellent.
Great. Congratulations.
Awesome.
On the house.
And you've said you've said we a few times, and you worked over at a friend's basement. Is is that Daniel?
Yeah, my friend Daniel. We started out. We've always been you know, kid friends. We didn't go to college together, but we went through high school together, and we've kept in touch ever since. But I guess he's, in the last year or so, he stepped in and helped. It's more of, we work together on a project, and then when it's done and ready, I'll do the final touches, any patchwork animation, and then I'll do the editing so that it's consistent with the you know, the feel and timing of my videos overall. So we've done work in the past, but you know, most of the newer videos, whenever you see his name on those, you know, he's actually doing a lot of the animation as well.
Oh, cool.
But then there are projects that are purely mine.
How do you say his last name?
It's Ficori.
Okay. Okay. And I dug around and I found, I think it was a channel probably both of you made, but it's in his name now. I guess it was originally Mike and Big Dan. I like those videos on there. Those were fun. I really love Buddy in a Box.
Me too.
That was
adorable.
That was great.
Well, see, that was sort of our take on trying different things and trying to go into more special effects. That was before he tried doing any, you know, brick filming. But it was just a little, you know, college project. I guess it was more or less a reason to hang out. You know, we'd make some silly videos, do some special effects, and then, you know, a month or so later, we'd bump into each other again and try to do a new one.
I also
It was fun, but it was a lot of work, and it was more, I guess, with brick filming, you can do it and then learn how to modify. But like video effects, either you kind of know it or you don't. So it was a lot of learning for what the payoff was. So we eventually decided, it's not really worth it. It's not really going anywhere.
Okay.
Let's, you know, go where the popularity is.
But
yeah.
They're still fun to watch, though.
Yeah. And I really liked Quick Cleanup, you and your Jedi powers. Those were awesome.
There we go.
So have you taught any classes or done demonstrations about Lego animation?
Well, I guess my mother's actually the secretary of the middle school that I, you know, would have attended. So I still have a connection with the local public school here. And I've gone in a couple times to, I guess, do a single class for like a STEM club or something after school. Not necessarily teaching, but, you know, more of a showcase and to say like, hey, if you want to do this, here's some resources. I guess the closest thing to like a formal teaching is, as I mentioned, I live near Cleveland, Ohio, and Cleveland, Ohio has a large science center, the Great Lakes Science Center. They actually did, I think they called it Build It, and it was a Lego exhibit. You know, they had like large sculptures, they had stop motion, they had all sorts of different things actually in multiple phases. So to kick it off, they always tried to get like some kind of celebrity. Like if they did the Olympics, you know, they'd have like a, I guess not to talk down, but they'd have like a B-grade Olympian come in, or they'd, you know, have a moon exhibit, and they'd, you know, they'd have like an astronaut come in. And I mean, it's never like top tier people, but obviously astronauts and athletes, that's, you know, top tier in itself. But so it's kind of cool because for the Lego exhibit, they asked me to come in, and, you know, it was actually the first time that they sold out.
Wow.
You know, for the exhibit. So it was kind of cool because I think it was, I want to say they sold like 400 tickets, and it was in a, like an IMAX theater, and I gave a presentation, and I mean, it was more of a family presentation followed by a Q&A. So it wasn't like a lecture or anything, but it was really cool to see that. And it's really good to get public feedback when you, you know, work online and the best he gets a thumbs up.
Right. Yeah, no, that's awesome. And what a great feeling just to be asked to do something like that. That's so exciting.
Yeah. Well, and it was funny too, because obviously they always try to get someone that's, you know, an expert in the field they're speaking of. And it turned out that about 3 months before, through a mutual friend, I met someone in the Science Center marketing. So when they were looking for people, you know, the young marketing person could go like, hey, I know a guy, you know, make some phone calls and then I come in.
How long was the display up or the exhibition running for?
I'd have to check the date. I think it was 2016, but it was March through September was the full exhibit.
Nice.
Okay, a couple months.
It off, and then they had three phases, and one of the phases was stop motion specific. So, you know, I had more input on that, and they'd build some tables and, you know, to have kids, you know, start doing some stop motion on, and they wanted my impact or input rather. And, you know, it was just cool to work with the Science Center and then, you know, bump into some kids. And it was really funny afterwards because, you know, there actually was an autograph line, and I've never even considered that. You know, I was just ready to put down the mic and walk away, but it's cool to feel like a celebrity at times.
That's awesome.
That's too cool. you made a promotional video, I believe, for the Lego movie in 2014.
Yes.
Do you have any stories about that project?
Okay, there's been a couple times. It's not as prevalent as you think. I guess to start off, everyone's always like, oh, you know, you should work for Lego. You should work for Warner Brothers. You should work for this, that, the other. And I'm always like, but if it's working out by myself, you know, it's easier to not have to answer to somebody.
Definitely a lot less stress.
But so there are opportunities, though, where, you know, you're approached by a larger name and there's a good opportunity. So the Lego movie promotion, for example, a representative from Warner Brothers contacted me, said, hey, we're going to promote the Lego movie. You know, do you think you can make us a video and we can work together on that? And that was one of those projects where I don't believe they actually paid me, but they gave me some perks, like they gave me a bin of Legos. They gave me a special release of the Lego movie before it was, you know, accessed, you know, before the public had, you know, the option to buy it or anything. But they gave me some different things, and I made a video, and it was basically an excuse to push farther into the intellectual property and kind of copyright stuff. But, you know, Warner Brothers was requesting it. So it's like, okay, I've got the green light to use Warner Brothers and the Lego movie, you know, 'cause if you're a regular guy and make a promotion, they might not want it and they'll try to shut you down.
Right.
So this was an excuse to, you know, use the buzzwords and use the, you know, the big deal things. But so I made them a video, we promoted it together, and, you know, years later, it's my fourth most watched video. So,
well, that works.
Yeah, it was funny because, yeah, like I said, it was never a commissioned project up front, but, you know, 53 million, you know, advertised views, you know, it does add up.
It's called free advertisement, and plus you get paid in Lego as well, which yeah, that adds up as well.
Now, there are other projects. Like, I did a project with a Canadian company to promote a show. It was called X Company. There's a video for that. I actually worked with Nintendo to release the I know the character's Chase McCain. I think it was Lego City Undercover. That was a Nintendo DS or 3DS game.
3DS, yeah. You know, we saw that, and I didn't even know that those things could do stop motion. I didn't realize it had, like, a camera that you could do that. So I was like, wow, that's really cool. So you actually kind of sold me on the 3DS just by watching that. I had no idea.
Now, see, with the Nintendo project, it was a three-part. There was a teaser, and they wanted me to show the capabilities of the 3DS. Then there was the actual, you know, animation that would help promote the game. And then there was a short behind the scenes afterwards. Just due to the project, you know, considerations, whatever they want on their end, the behind the scenes was a little limited. And the initial thought was that I'd make the whole video on the 3DS. But it's hard showing people that aren't used to stop motion that you need, you know, a sterile environment and not high-end equipment, but, you know, more than a cell phone or 3DS to make a video. So it sort of fell into those three phases, but that was another project where they did pay me, and then we promoted it together, and it's, you know, been watched many times.
But it was just nice knowing that you could actually do that. We have a lot of gadgets our kids have, and I didn't even know if we had one. I asked our daughter, I was like, do we have one of those? She's like, no, but I want one. I was like, I just thought it was a cool feature. It would be really cool for her to use.
Yeah, Well, and see, that's the thing, too, is going back to, you know, how we started the conversation. When I started, you know, it was a digital camera with batteries. And then, you know, you'd try to find a tripod. You'd have to use your parents' computer. And now you can just download an app and make stop motion videos, you know, whenever.
Yeah, yeah. The cell phones, actually, some good films are made with them.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It's just a creative outlet. It doesn't mean it has to be perfect. You don't have to have the best equipment, mm-hmm. but just to be able to be creative and put your stuff out there, I think, and have fun doing it. That's what I always say. That's really what it's all about.
Well, that's the whole thing is I had to have, you know, the stars align and be given the opportunity. And now, you know, anyone can have the opportunity to make something arguably better than any of my first videos, you know, just out of a cell phone.
Yeah, I wish I had a cell phone back in the days. I connected an old camcorder through a converter box into my FireWire on my computer, and it was, you know, low res.
Yeah.
Have you ever been involved or participated in any of the brick filming communities that are online, such as brickfilms.com or Bricks in Motion?
I actually have not. I guess starting out, I never thought I was like a pioneer or anything, but when I started out, I was just a kid making videos. You know, I sort of developed my own, you know, area, the style of content, whatever. So I just made videos, and then, you know, honestly, that was through a busy period of my life when I was growing, like I said, high school and then college. And I never really got that involved. So, you know, it's sort of why I'm trying to open up now and, you know, do things like this podcast and things like that. So I haven't historically, but I'm, you know, looking forward. I'm hoping to get more involved.
Well, excellent, excellent. Hopefully you'll check out some of our posts, and maybe when you're animating, listen to a few of our past podcasts. Hopefully they'll be informative. And
yeah, we appreciate you becoming a member of the Brick Filmers Guild. So it's really awesome to have you there.
Yeah, thanks.
And I know everybody gets negative feedback. It's just par for the course. Haters gonna hate. You have an amazing style that's all your own. You trademark certain things. You have a lot of attention to detail, like the bed. I love the bed that the light that actually dips down, so it looks like they're really getting into a bed. You have a lot of things like that that are really appreciated and noticed, and everybody has their own style, and you work so hard on your videos. It shows, but it also makes me angry when people criticize anybody, and they criticize everybody. I love what Forrest said. He actually takes the criticism, and it motivates him to say, oh, you think this is this? Well, I'm going to show you because I can, you know, do it better, which is such a great attitude.
Each is their own, but hopefully, you know, if anybody said anything in a post, say, on YouTube, you've turned that into something to make you better.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, my videos historically, you know, you watch the old ones, they're kind of slow going. They're more traditional, you know. Back in the day, though, you know, there weren't that many brick filmers that were, you know, busting into popularity. So I'm like, hey, even if I'm not, you know, 100% with this, it's what's working. So let's just, you know, improve upon that.
And that's it is working, though. And that's, you know.
No, I know. It's if you watch other people, obviously there's, you know, everyone's got their own style. Like my guys, for example, they walk very, you know, square with the pegs, and some people like zoom in so you don't see their feet, so they can do more of like a nice, you know, theatrical arc instead of like, you know, okay, now turn and real square.
Mm-hmm. See, but I love that.
Everyone's got their own style, but, you know, one thing is I guess the way I treat the negative feedback is all of mine comes through YouTube. So obviously if it's in the comments, you know, you can see like, oh, they're talking about this. That's an area for improvement. Oh, they think it's slow. Okay, so next video I'll try to, you know, speed up the pace. But if I look at my, you know, the list of videos, my most disliked videos are also my most popular. And it's kind of funny because even though it's a lot of people liking and a lot of people disliking, the dislike ratio is higher. But the way I see that is those videos have become big enough and, you know, popular enough where they've busted out of the Lego fanboy community. And you're going to get more dislikes, you know, the general population, they're just going to watch it and be more critical than, you know, a starry eyed kid going, wow, this is Lego. I love it. I don't care what it is.
Right.
So the more dislikes, you know, it's good and it's bad. I mean, obviously the most popular videos are ones I'm proud of and are very well received. So those dislikes, I kind of see that as a, you know, almost a badge of honor at some point. obviously it's still a good percentage. You know, if it was like 50% dislikes, okay, that's a red flag. But, you know, if it's still like 80% positive or more, that just shows that, you know, people are watching the video that wouldn't normally, and that's something good.
That's awesome. You have a great attitude, and I love that. But I also love it that you have your own style. I mean, if everybody's looked exactly the same, then they'd be complaining about that. So the fact that you do have your own style and you do stay true to that, I think that's a wonderful thing. And I love it also you...
On your website, in your description, you wrote...
You put, although I may not be the best animator or storyteller out there, I pride myself on being able to balance the two in a way that not many others do. I focus on clean and universal content for my global fan base with no cursing or mature themes. And being a family and trying to, and also having to keep things family friendly, we totally love and appreciate that.
Yeah, and I mean, there are a couple videos, you know, like maybe some gun violence or things, but I try to downplay that and not do that as much. But like, I just did like a Fortnite video game, you know, video.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I try to replicate the style and still make it a little more playful. But yeah, I try to be real universal. Historically, I try to downplay the dialogue because even the top five countries, probably three of them don't speak English as the primary language. So I try to, you know, put some language in there if it's a punchline or something's needed, but it shouldn't be the deciding factor on the story. You know, like the video should still be able to be enjoyed if you don't understand English, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I try
to be real universal, and I guess the, you know, going back to the balance of animation and story, back in the day, like I said, I don't want to, you know, brag or push myself as like a pioneer necessarily, but back in the day, there weren't that many people making Lego videos, and it was just funny because I was growing in popularity really fast, and people way better than me weren't. But, you know, it's just kind of like, well, what's going on? You know, there's animators I'm looking up to, and I just pass them in views. So it's, I guess a lot of people didn't have the balance. I'm not saying I'm the best storyteller. I know I'm not the best animator. But certainly back in the day, there were very few people doing a cartoon story all the way through that was, you know, not just a little gimmick project. And, you know, that did take off. Also, a lot of people, you know, animate with a higher frame rate or can be more professional. I still stick with the 15 frames per second, but obviously the, you know, a good, well-planned 15 frames per second is better than hacking a video and making it 15.
Mm-hmm.
So there's still areas for improvement, but, you know, I've kind of found my area of expertise, and I'm trying to just, you know, expand upon myself rather than really compare myself to others.
No, and that's great. And plus, you do have a huge fan base, and you do give them what they want, and that's a wonderful thing. And that's why they love you so much, and that's why you do have a million subscribers, because they enjoy what you do for them. And you upload an insane amount of videos. Do you have any trouble, like, coming up with stories or anything?
Well, people always ask, you know, oh, where do you get your stories from? I mean, I'd like to think of myself as a fairly creative person, but I mean, if it takes, you know, say 40 hours or so to make a video, by the time you're done, you're sick of it and you're trying to think of other stories and what you'd rather be doing. So, you know, you're the entire time you're working on a video, you're not, you know, writing it as you go. There's plenty of time where you're sitting there kind of empty-minded animating and just playing with the different toys. You can see, like, oh, hey, I have a skunk piece. Let's try to make a story about that. You know, so there's, when you put this much time into videos, there's lots of time to think and there's always new stories. So I never really have any problem. And I think I have my next 10 written right now.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Are any of them based on any like real life events? Anything that happened to you personally?
I guess nothing or none of my stories are too personal, but obviously I have my fair share of, you know, guy has a miserable time, but, you know, I guess it's more of just, I was growing up, I was always a big fan of like Seinfeld, you know, the situational type humor and
me
stuff.
Too.
So, I mean, it's sort of, you know, reflected in different things. I guess it's more shaped by the entertainment, like I grew up with cartoons or certain shows, and that style's more reflected than, you know, my personal experiences. But, you know, obviously if I have an experience, I'll always spin it into a story.
Okay, cool.
Of course, what comes to mind is was it the Lego pool? Is that what
it
was
called?
That was funny, being in the water.
Well, see, every time there's like, you know, a situation, you're like, oh, what else can happen? Because you need to develop the story more. So, yeah, there's always, I'm sure every video has at least one personal thing that's happened, but, you know, it's been expanded upon since.
And that was a funny, I love the detail of the yellow bricks in the water, obviously. I mean, that's one of those things, attention to detail, that was just funny and appreciated.
That and just the splashing in general was way cool.
Yeah, that was really cool. I love the pool. Made me want to jump in.
Yeah. So, yeah, you've made some gradual improvements where you've switched from the 4:3 aspect ratio to 16:9. I believe you did that in 2013. At some point, you switched from a lower frame rate to your 15 that you use now is what I use also. One of the things I've noticed is your camera angles started getting a lot better. You kind of had the typical higher angles at first, but now they're coming down more to eye level, and even some really cool close-ups on like some footsteps. I think I noticed just you showed the legs of someone walking in, I think, in your Brick Arms battle.
Which was a great video,
really
by
cool.
the way,
and
yeah.
You've been upgrading your cameras and replacing them because I guess one of your videos said you've taken calculated like a quarter of a million pictures so far. So that'll go through some cameras there. And like we said before, you started using the blue paperboard, and I kind of dig that. You mentioned you do a lot of masking. There was one that came to mind. I think it was possibly the pizza delivery where someone flips out of a window.
Yeah, that was the pizza one.
That was really cool. And how do you achieve that? Do you do that in like with an editing program, or do you do it with like a paint program?
Well, I use a program called Sony Vegas. I guess it shows more of, you know, I'm historically a camera and PC type guy. I've grown to know what I work with very well, but I obviously don't know what's out there because I haven't been shopping in a while. So, like, Sony Vegas is meant for more, you know, video editing than pictures. But, you know, I'm using 1% of its capabilities, but I know that 1% very well. So in there, you can layer the video, the audio, you can do everything. So in the editing program, I can select and do, like, a cookie cutter and then paste it over the other one. So I do the editing frame by frame inside of my video program.
Okay.
And, you mentioned like the guy flipping through the window. I try to downplay the masking if I can. Like that one, for example, when the guy jumps through the window, he's still attached to the building. And then at the last minute when he's moving away, I have to use a support. So there's still creative ways of downplaying like how much work there is, you know, post-production. But, I think the main effect I do is masking. Lately, I've done a little bit of more like thought bubbles and that kind of thing.
Okay.
But I try to keep it as pure to Lego as I can so that it's not like, you know, it obviously would add to the production quality. But then to me, it kind of takes away from it being fun and just being about toys.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I know you did a really cool effect in the Midnight Club of a gun flash.
Oh, I forgot about that, yes.
That one was a cool effect. But obviously, you know, it takes even more time to do that. One of the things I loved in the Midnight Club, that was one of my favorites, was when the gun was shot when they were hiding behind the wall and a little piece of the wall broke off when the bullet hit it. I thought that was just
really
a really cool effect.
Yeah.
Another one of the effects I liked, and I saw it, I think, in a couple of times. I think it was in Pizza Delivery 5, when a person got on the elevator would kind of bump a little bit. I guess you were jiggling that around in the editing program. That had a cool effect. And another thing that I thought was interesting in Pizza Delivery 5, a couple things, actually. You animated, I'm guessing that you can't call it a minifigure, but the figure.
Oh, the big guy.
The big guy. Gotcha. What is that, about a foot tall?
Yeah. He's actually a flashlight.
Oh, wow, so funny.
If you push in the Lego logo on his stomach, his feet light up.
I think we have one, but maybe a smaller version.
Very small, yeah, compared to that. That seemed like it was pretty big.
Yeah, that's a big
one. That Pizza Delivery 5, I'd say that one is probably the hardest one to make, and honestly, I do like the flow and developed. Like, if you asked what my favorite one was, and maybe you will later, I'd say it's probably Pizza Delivery 5, just because the amount of effort that went into making that one and the payoff, I think, was pretty cool as well.
Well, there's a shot in it where I'm guessing you were animating about 100 minifigures.
When they were all running after him.
I, yeah. Now, I think it was actually about 180.
Oh, my gosh.
I said it was more than 100. Right. See, okay. I was right. Thank you.
I remember counting, but obviously, that was beginning of 2014. But I had every available body I had.
Oh, wow.
And if you study it, maybe there's even imperfections. Like, I think there was, like, you know, a person or two where I ran out of heads. So I just put a hat on this, you know, neck peg.
That's
but
funny.
So it was every person and body I had, but I also cheated because if you look, the front edge is kind of running and then the rest slide as groups on like base plates.
Yeah.
So I'm not animating them all individually, but still that was a long shot with a lot of people.
How long did that shot take to do? Because I think it was about 5 seconds or so.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, my longest shot, I mean, I don't keep track shot to shot, but I know I've had a shot where I've started at like 9:30 in the morning, and then I had to stop and take a lunch break, and then I finished at about 1:30.
Wow.
Because, you know, obviously, you know, once you start, you're committed to it.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I think the longest shot, and it's more of my just unnecessary, you know, attention to detail. I think it may have been Pizza Delivery 6. A crowd runs in, they engulf a house, and it, you know, disappears piece by piece, and then they move on. It's like a swarm of locusts or something. And if you watch each character has a nice path. It's not like just random. But I think that was the one where it took a couple hours, and I was just hoping it was good take one.
Another one of your techniques, things that you do is you'll do shots like when someone opens up a mailbox, it'll be from inside the mailbox. I think there was a shot where someone was in the sand or something.
The inside taxis and stuff.
That's kind of some different there, but I liked that. And yeah, definitely the inside of taxi, it's on the outside, you know, it's one seat in the middle, but when you crawl inside, you got three seats across and gives you plenty of room to do all your animating.
Yeah. Always like to, you know, joke around about that too. It's, you know, it just is a thing. It's not like a criticism, but it's funny because, yeah, the guy gets in the car's four pegs wide, and then he's inside and it's 12.
Yeah, that gives us a little flexibility on how we do things. There's something else you did on one of your more recent ones, although I think you've done the technique twice, is when the pedal goes down and it's just like all it is a big foot you've constructed out of Lego pushing a pedal down. And I love that. And then you even, on the same video, I believe, is the police chase, and you had a little micro scale chase at one point. I like seeing a lot of mixed scales. I think it's fun to see.
You can always say that the taxi things are like the clown effect, you know, where you have the little punch buggy and it looks, and then you have like, 50 clowns coming out of it, you know. It's just fun.
Another one, thing, some of your construction build or whatever was I'll get to the construction build, but the technique you did in the was when someone slid on a banana peel in Lego Zoo. I liked that effect, and we already talked about the swimming pool.
But the Lego Zoo, my daughter and I especially liked that because we loved the animals. You did a great job of making them adorable. We love things that are cute, and they were also really well done.
Now, what's funny too is like, I don't know if I did like a rhino and an elephant for the zoo.
You did.
The other thing is people always want to see, like, you know, the full city or the full building. They don't realize you normally build exactly what you see.
Mm-hmm.
And like the rhino, for example, it used these curved gray pieces, and I didn't have that many. So it's funny because that's a front, just the front of a rhino. There's no back to him.
Oh, that's funny. He's a little hollow.
So it's funny because there's always tricks just right in front of your face, and you'll never know.
Well, that's going to be my next question is, do you have a instructions for the build of those? Those are cool.
They were really cute. And, of course, the Justice Warrior side of me, when I saw the guy throwing the rock at the rhino, I was like, I hope that other guy does something and gets him back or something, throws a rock back at him.
No, that's the thing, too, is we always want to try to make it so it's more of a, you know, like if a guy is like a jerk to an animal, you don't want that to just slide through. We kind of want that justice to come back through.
Definitely.
That's good.
So a lot of times we're writing some kind of story element, and then it's just like, ah, dang it, that's not going to work. That's, you know, we have to resolve that if we include that.
Mm-hmm. I kind of like it. It reminded me of the monkey video, you know, where the guy's dangling a banana in front of a monkey, and he's just taunting him with it. And and then he eventually gets poo flung at him from the monkey.
Yeah.
So there was the justice. I loved it.
Yeah. But yeah, to go back on the banana peel and stuff. Yeah, those are all effects in stop motion. Nothing's really, you know, added. I guess the other one to bring up would be, I only did it a couple times, but in like Lego School, for example, the minifigure runs and then he runs real fast and he turns to a blurred wedge.
Yeah, I like that effect.
So I try to do things, but I mean, it's hard to come up with opportunities sometime to use those.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the guy sliding on a banana peel and it, like, you know, leaving a streak. How many videos can you write that into? You know, so oftentimes there's a good idea for a special effect, but no place to use it.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but it is awesome though, and that's the thing. When you do go and watch all your videos, you notice something in everything that's like, oh, that's such a cool detail, or that was really neat. So I mean, there's always something that is just mm-hmm. really cool about your videos.
I like your egg splatter when breaks and turns into, you know, a broken egg.
Within the food fight.
I'm not sure if I have any of those round white ones. That's kind of a
weird piece.
They look
so real.
Yeah.
You're saying with the egg splatter?
Egg splatter,
yeah.
Yeah,
the food fight when he threw the egg and then it turned into, you know, you could see the yolk and was awesome.
The actual egg, it's like a mini stud that the minifigure can grab and then it's like a dome top.
Mm-hmm.
I actually got that as part of an Easter set. So I know I know those are meant to be eggs. And everything else is just, you know, a white cylinder or a splat that looks close.
Yeah, I like that. You've done car skidding a lot. And even that was one of your older techniques that you used a whole bunch. When a car goes around a corner, you'll see a few gray studs or whatever pop up. But I like that effect. That's a cool effect. And then in one, I think the car even peeled out and left a black mark on the ground. Yeah. And I liked that. I think you mentioned this might have been the Canadian company that contracted you. Was that the iTech Solutions one where a building blasts off and like grows from two stories into like six stories?
No, that's a similar project, but without getting into details, mm-hmm. it was a company that I have I guess a family connection with,
mm-hmm.
and it was more of just like a staffing type firm. And they wanted to have a video, you know, they had an in with me. So, you know, I did a video with them, but yeah, as the business grows, the building literally, you know, shoots out from the earth as it grows. And it's, you know, if there's something happening like that, I always try to add some kind of effect just to, you know, even hide the imperfections sometimes.
Mm. Well, I like that. I like
that. Yeah, that building growing was awesome.
Was cool. That was cool. And
what's funny too, is another thing that's, you know, point blank, is it looks like the building's growing for a while, but it actually grows a little bit and then loops so that the window like re-grabs itself.
Mm-hmm.
So it's funny because it looks like the building grows out as one smooth motion.
Yeah, it does.
But a lot of it's actually reused and looped, so it looks like it keeps going floor by floor by floor, but it doesn't.
Okay.
See, that's a good trick. That's a great tip.
Great trick.
Yeah.
Great trick.
Yeah, but it's funny because, I mean, just looping something in the right place that people won't recognize, that saves a couple hours of work.
Yeah, that's important.
And the viewer is no wiser.
Right. Very important to save time with stop motion whenever you can, because mm-hmm. it is such a time-consuming labor of love, if you will.
Gotta have your tricks. And just briefly, I don't have to go into this. I liked when they were doing the track and field. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as Tim and Ralph, track and field, I liked when the shot put hit the ground, it like splashed ground, you know, when, you know.
It, like the sand, how like, it would come out if it hits the ground and the sand kind of.
Yeah, pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
And that's what we're saying is we really appreciate your attention to details. Detail. Yeah.
Well, I always try to keep, like if it's a business or something, I always try to make sure there's people like milling in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is I try to make sure that, I try to plan the randomness, if that makes sense. Like if people are walking around a corner or walking in, I try to make sure that they don't sync up on the same foot so they're not marching together.
Oh, right.
So it's funny because a lot of times if there's like, you know, chaos happening, I've got to at least think in my head like, you know, there's nothing worse than mid-shot. You're going to have two people collide and you're like, I should have planned for this.
Do you ever shoot any scenes backwards?
Yes. I've actually done that a lot more recently. I guess an easy example is just if a car comes in and stops and you want it exactly in the right spot, it's easier to start from the exact spot you want it to and then accelerate backwards than have it come in and just hope you slow it down enough so it stops right where you want it.
Excellent.
You know, so there's simple things for like the planning aspect. And then if there's something that's difficult to do, like, I guess, okay, using the car again, if a guy comes in with the car and then turns and looks, the turning and looking is hard in the car because you have to turn the guy's head without moving the car. You know, so you'll do the difficult side first, and then if that works out, you're good, and then you can finish the shot, versus do the whole shot and then screw up the difficult ending.
Right. Okay.
So that's the only times I do it is to, you know, get the difficult part out of the way, or if it's a timing issue I'm, you know, concerned with.
Okay.
But yeah, I've got no problem with filming backwards.
Excellent, excellent. And we've already gone into a few of your cool construction techniques, like your beds and the zoo animals. You like to put sidewalks in on a lot of your sets. Is that just for aesthetics, or do you find that the Legos stick better to that than the base plates?
I guess, honestly, you're probably more aware of my techniques than me. a lot of times I just build and then I fill in to make it look good. Like if I'm using the road base plates and then I'm butting it up against a green base plate, sometimes I want to cover that seam, make it a little more, you know, smooth transitional, or so you don't have the gap where you see the table down through.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more of just build what I feel the scene needs. And then a lot of times I try to keep like a primary color in each shot as much as I can. Like if I have a white character in a white building, I'm going to try to splash some blue, green, red, you know, some big popping colors into it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like if it's a drab city, I'll try to put like a bright red mailbox or something next to it. So it's more of just what the scene needs than a, you know, consistency aspect.
Right.
Well, I liked your use of sidewalks, so that maybe I'll do that some more.
Realistic,
no, it's realistic, and you know, also I don't know if you've noticed, but as for me, I find that the base plates don't have that clutch power as well as the regular plates or bricks.
Yeah, the tolerances are a little tighter. They work, but the only drawback is if you have a big section of the flat one plates attached to a base plate, sometimes they'll bow the base plate underneath it, and then your set will bounce.
Yeah.
So it does have its drawback, but if you use smaller pieces, it doesn't tighten up that much. Because I forget what the biggest, you know, flat plates are. They're like, you know, say 12 by 12 or larger.
Mm-hmm.
If you use that, you always get some bounce just because they don't mesh perfect.
Okay.
So it's funny because I just do it, and if there's problems, you know, I won't. I never really think of it. It's a case-to-case base, I guess, but I probably always do the same thing.
Do you keep a lot of your scenic buildings constructed?
To reuse?
Usually
to reuse?
Not. I try to keep things sorted by, you know, color and function. Like I'll have, you know, the roof pieces together, the doors together, and then I'll try to have the bricks separated by colors. But I try to not use the same thing every time, you know, because it'd be bad if you built a house and that's just the house now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it is funny because especially for the faster production videos like the Tim and Ralph's or like a pizza delivery where there's a lot of scenery to burn through, you'll notice how the city always has about the same 10 buildings. They're just shuffled to be different.
Yeah.
So there is recycling, but I'd say most of the times when a video is done, the only things I keep are the, you know, the characters and smaller builds like cars, vending machines, mailboxes, trees, that kind of thing.
Yeah. One of the buildings that stood out, and just it might have been the colors, but I liked the yellow one with the black edges. It was kind of the Bumblebee building, as I thought of it.
No, it's funny because that's... Like I said, I try to do some color contrast sometimes. And if you build a nature scene or a city scene, there's really no reason for there to be yellow other than it's Lego.
Yeah.
So that kind of adds some brightness and some color and some, you know, fun to it rather than being realistic.
Some of those buildings
you see more than once.
That's all good. I liked, I think your application of snow in a few of your videos. You just and it just wasn't, you know, a blanking everywhere. It's just like there was piles of it, and sometimes it was a clear piece, and sometimes it was a white piece. And I liked your application of snow on your sets.
Yeah, and once again, that's just you know, it's winter. What can I do? And then you just, you know, kind of wing it, make it look good. Mm. What's funny though, starting out, that was purely by accident because I didn't have that many Lego pieces, so I'm trying to build a white scene, and I'm like, I don't have enough. I've got to spread it out.
Oh, okay. Well, it worked. It still gave you the feeling, hey, it's winter. You got to work around any of your inventory issues.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny, too, because I'm, like I said, I'm from Ohio. We typically have a rough Midwestern winter, so it's funny, too, because I've gotten comments before where, you know, people will watch a video and they're having a good time, but they've never had a winter.
Yeah, it's kind of like us. We don't get too much winter.
We get a winter about every 4 or 5 years.
If we're lucky.
Yeah. Well, see, we always get pounded with snow, but then we make do. We've got snowmobiles and everything else, so the winter's still fun.
I would love to have that.
Get a bit of a, I guess, the lake effect, maybe?
Yes.
Yeah, so it probably snows quite a bit up in northeastern Ohio.
Yeah, the town, it's not directly north of me, but a couple towns north of me is actually arguably the heaviest hit of all of Ohio.
Oh, wow.
So it's funny because, like, going to school growing up, you know, there'd be a snowstorm. We're at the southern part of the district, and we're like, it's a dusting. But up north, they got hit with 20 inches overnight, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just funny because, yeah, winter, you know, every time it's, you know, the end of the calendar year, I'm always thinking of, hey, it's time for snow. It's time for snow video.
And here, it's like things shut down. If it might snow, it's like, oh, it might snow tomorrow. Right. Run to the store, deplete everything of the milk. And, you know, where I grew up in Connecticut. So you had to have like at least 8 inches before they'd even think about closing the schools.
Exactly.
I miss that. Do you make any storyboards or animatics?
I used to draw out the storyboards, but I guess it's more of a personality trait than anything. Like I said, I was an engineer, so I can conceptualize a lot in my head. And if I write a story and think like the story's viable, I already know what's going on. So for me to write it out, it's more of just a formality. Like if someone else was going to take over the project, I'd write it out. But other than that, I kind of just write out my bullet points and then use it as like a live checklist, if you will.
Okay.
Like when I start a video, you know, I'll write down the bullet points of what I need and kind of like where the funny aspects are, how the story develops. And then as I animate, I'll just, you know, erase them or elaborate like, oh, okay, I need the camera from this angle and this angle and that. So it's more of on the fly, just notes to keep myself, you know, productive. But yeah, only a couple times have I actually drawn out a storyboard and, you know, done more of a, you know, thought in advance.
You had a client give you a storyboard once, right? Like the Lego Midnight Combat Club, whatever?
Yeah, if I work with someone, they usually want a storyboard. But at the same time, I've worked with people where they're like, hey, we're contacting you. You're the creative. We don't want to steer you in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, oh, okay, I appreciate the, you know, the freedom. But at the same time, I kind of want approval on this, you know? So I have worked with storyboards before. That Midnight Combat, the X Company video, that was directly not super accurate, but that was a recreation of a scene that was going to be – it was actually a scene that was going to be in an episode of a TV show, but they had yet to film it. So they had a storyboard that was being used both for the Lego video and the live action on the scene. And the thought on their end was it'd be cool to see the difference of styles and also the creative differences on how we each take the story.
Oh, cool.
It's nice when companies will give you creative freedom, because we're working with somebody now and they realize that even though they want to see a particular scene, we know what works with brick filming and what doesn't. So it's nice when they say, you do what you think will make it look the best, you know, and that's it's important.
Well, then to add on that, like when I worked with Nintendo before, they paid me to make a video, and they actually paid fairly well. And the deal was, they're like, listen, we can either spend a lot of money across the board and just hope we find people that like Lego video games, or we can pay you and know that every single view is a Lego enthusiast who probably plays our games.
That's a great idea.
So it's funny because, I mean, people use me for my specific demographic as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know,
you're reaching the audience that they want.
Yeah, they know you'll do well with the video, and then they also know, well, you know, hey, his audience respects his work. So if we do our own interpretation, they're not going to like it because it's not his.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
No, that's a smart on their part.
One of your main series that you do is Tim and Ralph. I believe you started that in the fall of 2014. It's basically your buddy brick film. One of the things I noticed and I thought it was cool, it has no dialogue. It's all music. Mm-hmm. This is one of the situations where most of the time you'll use Kevin MacLeod, but you actually got someone to write some music. Charles Harrison?
Yeah. Now, I guess this will kind of dive into the realism and business behind the Lego. But I started Tim and Ralph as just kind of a project to see if I did a series, could I make them faster, more streamlined, you know, get more content out? you know, honestly make some more money on top of it. But the Tim and Ralph's, the first series specifically was meant to be, okay, slightly lower budget on time and effort, but let's make them, you know, of a slightly different style. So at the time, I was actually working as an engineer, and I took some time off to make those videos. So my personal favorite one is the Tim and Ralph, the Mousetrap one.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually animated that from start to finish in one day.
Oh, wow.
Because it was funny because I was, you know, PTO. I took time off from work, and I'm at home, and I'm like, I want to make this work because I'd rather be doing this than sitting at my engineering job. So the Tim and Ralphs were meant to be, you know, faster. And at the time, I think he actually contacted me, Charles Harrison, with the music. He was, you know, he was very talented. It was a different style. It did fit the Tim and Ralph, you know, very, very well. But I, you know, I was paying him to make the music. And eventually, you know, as YouTube's changed, the life cycle of each video got shorter. So like back in the day, you'd put out a video and it would just be out there, be making lots of views, lots of money, and it'd just be, you know, cranking away. Now you put a video out, it goes through a popularity cycle, and then it becomes old news. So video to video, the budget and, you know, sadly the music budget kept going down and down. So eventually, you know, Charles Harrison was a great asset, a great thing to have. You know, I loved working with him, but eventually it was like, hey, I can't be spending this much money on music anymore. I've got to go back to the, you know, the free royalty free type, you know, type musics. So the Tim and Ralph series was great. And it was really a showcase of Charles and his talents. I'd send him a blank video with no sounds on it. A day later, he'd send me a, you know, a score written to it.
Excellent. Wow.
And yeah, then we'd kind of be like, okay, this needs a little more here. I'll speed this up so it fits your music a little different. But the, you know, he was very talented. The turnaround was excellent. But like I said, you know, as YouTube sort of went out of what I'd consider the golden era for, you know, views, finances, and, you know, just overall exposure, I had to eventually go back. And so the Tim and Ralph, there's three series, and the fourth one's actually coming out soon. So I guess as the time we talk, this is July 11th. The plan is that the Friday, 2 days from today, is going to be the first of five new ones.
Awesome. Look forward.
But it's going to be interesting because I'm going to be using Kevin MacLeod's music. So it'll be a little different. So the characters and feel and stories will be the same, but the music will be different. So I'm hoping it's, you know, it's enough to feel the same. And if it's not, I'll have to, you know, dig deeper in my pockets and hopefully get Charles back on board.
There you go.
Well, there's a lot of royalty-free sites. I mean, we use Kevin more than anything, but I've luckily found some other ones. And the more you can find, you can find that special piece that happens to fit your video.
Yeah. Well, that's sort of the thing too. Not to talk over you, but the you know, for Tim and Ralph, it's a playful, you know, sound, and you know, Charles did a lot of like mallet work and stuff. It's a specific, you know, music, and it's hard to find that elsewhere. So that's the only way I'm nervous is, you know, the music fits very well, but it might not be Tim and Ralph.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, having original music, we notice a lot with, you know, when people enter our festival, it makes a huge difference because it really does fit it perfectly for each scene, and it has a feel that, you know, the music is so important. So yeah, when you have somebody who can write some music for you, I mean, that's a wonderful thing to have. The rest, when you're using royalty free, it just means you need to kind of research more and listen to more music to find the exact.
Yeah. No, and I mean, I really hope I'm not done with Charles, but like I said, the, you know, as YouTube's always changing, obviously they have to, but, you know, back in the day, I could spend a lot on a video, you know, up front and take it as a loss because I knew it would return. And now the video life cycle is shorter, so you have to recoup those losses faster.
Have you experienced any issues with YouTube over the last few years of ad going on to videos or not? I know I listen to a lot of podcasts, and it's usually the, you know, it's political podcasts. So if you say the wrong word or have the wrong thing in the title, they won't monetize it. Have you had any issues with that or a drop in revenue over the last couple of years with these changes?
Well, I guess, you know, just to start with revenue, 2014, 2015, those were very, very big years for me, both in views and exposure and money. And then 2016 was where, for whatever reason, the January 2016 things shifted. And I think that was just a new YouTube algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
Beginning of 2016 was where that the video life cycle really cut back. I realize there, you know, is a lot more competition these days too, but the way the videos were promoted within or shared, it seemed like they were, you know, obviously they can't just like blacklist you or anything, but it seemed like, you know, they moved more people out of the spotlight to try to like promote more people, which I mean is great for people starting out, but at the same time I feel like people starting on YouTube are having more struggles than ever. Right. Just due to the competition, the way YouTube works. But so I mean it's fallen quite a bit. I don't know how much farther it could fall before, you know, I've got to reconsider things. But so 2014, 2015, those were very golden years, you know, lots of good content too, but you know, that was sort of the peak, and it's gone downhill since. But as far as, you know, demonetization and things like that, I feel like most people that ask about that, and I mean, I don't mean this at you at all, but most people don't know much about behind the scenes on YouTube. So if they read an article about, oh, hey, I heard they're taking ads off, you know, that's what people want to talk about. And I'm like, that's not, you know, playful Lego videos. That's more like, you know, not to use names. Okay, let's say like Samsung advertised on a video and the guy was, you know, making racist comments. Okay, right. They're going to demonetize that real quick.
It's more for the inappropriate.
Specific. Yeah, it's companies that are getting associated with things they don't want to,
right,
just based on blind luck and, you know, how the advertising works.
Well, your content's
so for me, I've never been demonetized, but I know they're a little pickier with their policy, or they're more, you know, precise with it. Because if I upload a video, occasionally it's flagged as a non-appropriate just due to some algorithm, and then I've got to just manually say no, it's okay, check it out, and then usually within like 10 minutes it's fine.
Right, but, I've know, done the same but, thing it, it's
but,
a very
but the fact
thing.
Is that never used to be.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, so, and I agree.
Yeah, and then like I said, I work with this Studio 71 as sort of a middleman between YouTube and myself, and they also do some like direct ad work themselves, so for me it's actually good because they can say, listen, we know a couple of you know, the brands, they're more sensitive and, you know, cautious about ad scandals and getting in trouble on YouTube. This guy makes clean, family-friendly content. You're safe to advertise with him. And then they go, oh, okay, no problem. So the fact that I'm more universal actually is, you know, becoming more and more beneficial to myself because it steers clear of any scandals.
Definitely.
Excellent.
And you know, you can't blame these advertisers. They're paying a lot of money to advertise. They're not going to want to advertise on something that is going to hurt their brand. I mean, that's insane for anybody to think otherwise. Mm-hmm. It's totally understandable what they've done.
No, I mean, I completely agree. And I mean, like I said, any negatives I see is more of just, you know, competition and the online dynamic, which obviously is going to change. I'd say as far as policies and advertisers and things like that, you know, nothing's been negative on my end.
Okay.
No, and I'm going to jump back just for a quick second on Tim and Ralph, because one of the really cool effects in the rematch was when they combined the cars, when the two ran into each other and it turned into one car. That was really cool.
That took a little while, but it's funny because a lot of times you realize 15 frames a second, if you've got a couple frames that are like a little weird or you're not too sure what to do, it's short. You know, you can power through it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like the cars combining. I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to do it, but it's Lego. They can combine. Let's do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was one where I actually didn't plan the combined vehicle until I was doing it. Because I'm like, I don't know where it's going to go, but obviously I want this piece to come from left to right, this one from right to left. I want it to look organic, so let's go.
Well, it worked, definitely.
Yeah, and that's sort of the other thing, too. Not, like I said, not to go on another tangent, but some things I don't plan out just because I want them to be more organic feeling, you know, than robotic, right? To go back to that.
Right. Well, no, but that's the thing. And I think people that criticize anybody, they really haven't watched all of their things. They might have seen one thing, it's like, oh, well, that's not really my style, or I don't like that because they're comparing it to somebody else. But really, you need to concentrate on, look at all the good that is in here and how talented that is and how much work it takes to do that, instead of, you know, just complaining because for whatever reason they have to complain, which as far as I'm concerned, they have no reason. You know, take a look at really all the work that's going into this and all the love and all the attention to detail.
Yeah.
And you'll realize you really have nothing to say.
Well, what I think's funny, too, is like I'll have friends that are like, oh, yeah, I saw a couple videos. Let's see. I saw your shark one. I saw the claw one. I'm like, those are 8 years old. I'm not even happy with those. You know, my most popular videos aren't always the new ones. So it's funny because, you know, if people see you for the first time, usually it's some historical piece that you're no longer proud of.
Yeah. Oh, we have that. We have things like that too. Sorry.
Yeah. And then it's funny too, because you get the opposite side. You get friends that are like, oh, sorry, I've fallen behind. I haven't watched them. I'm like, I don't want you to feel obligated. You know, I'm not making them for you. I appreciate that you're watching, but, you know, you don't have to be a fan just because you know me.
Yeah, no, we're embarrassed, or I am, about some of our older things, like our Galactic Smuggler series. Love the series, but the first, I think, three Couple episodes, three, yeah. I can't even bear to watch it, because I was stupid enough to voice one of the male characters myself. And I'm like, what was I thinking?
I'll look that one up.
Terrible. No.
it's a fun little series.
No, it's a great series. Once you get to, and it moves on. And once you get past that third episode, and then we have Gareth Spugastu voicing the character of Doc, then it was like a completely different thing. It's like, oh my gosh, where have you been all my life?
And that's just the fun of growing and getting better. I mean, everyone's the same.
But it's good to see people's old work. People say, some people delete their things. That's like, you should never delete it. It's wonderful to see how far you've come, you know?
Yeah.
Well, don't delete. You can always make unlisted.
Yeah, that's true. Well, and like my first brick films, I mean, they were like 4 frames a second. I mean, you know, they're nothing to write home about.
but seeing that, and then you see how much you've improved, I think that's a wonderful thing. I think they're all important to see.
Yeah, I've been really enjoying the more recent ones. Got some good stuff there. You have a Roku channel, is that correct?
Yeah, and that's actually something that I don't personally oversee. But that was, that was another opportunity where someone approached me, said, hey, we're doing some apps, we're doing some Roku things, we'd really like to have your content, we'd like to give you money, and we do the work.
Excellent.
Hey, Ted, they can call us too if you want. Tell them, hey. They can call us, tell them they want to give money.
No, but it's funny because there's certain things where there's, companies like that where obviously I'm not going to write my own app or things like that. And, they're trying to be real respectful of copyrights and that sort of thing. So, they come to you, you sign the contract agreement. I mean, if I want to make my own Roku, or if another opportunity comes up, or if I'm not happy with the way they're running it, I can obviously steer it in any direction I want. But it's nice to expand out and try to get the content to different people, especially with kids and this kid content. I mean, I probably don't have to tell you guys, but you can be watching Lego videos, just blindly stumbling, and all of a sudden there's some really crude content.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And so a lot of people, they're like, you can watch Lego videos, but only watch his, or, here's the app, only watch his Roku, just because it's safer.
Mm-hmm.
So I like having that opportunities for people that are more, particular about that.
Yeah, we're associated with Brick Video, and they have a Roku channel, and there's probably 30 or 40 animators that contribute to it, but it's cool to see that you have your own. So
yeah, that's nice.
That's
pretty
awesome.
That really is cool.
Yeah, and like I said, it's, obviously no complaints from me, but the truth of the matter is it wasn't a decision that was, just mine.
Excellent. Do you listen to any podcast or radio or
while you're
animating?
Well, yeah, I used to listen to CDs just of, regular music, but when you're changing CDs left and right, you kind of realize how much time you're putting in.
All right. So
I listen to a lot of music. I listen to different shows and that sort of thing, but as far as podcasts go, I'm starting to go down that route just now, kind of late to the party, but I listen to some radio talk shows, I listen to their podcasts and stuff, but if you've got some good ones, send them my way. I definitely need things to listen to, trying to animate all the time. Yeah. So
Neil deGrasse Tyson has a great one, Star Talk, and there's a lot of different things. I use the app. There's some podcasts on YouTube. A little harder to for me to deal with because I load everything onto an iPod and travel with it. I started listening to podcasts because I was animating all the time. I got sick of listening to the radio and music, and I fell in love with the format, and thus we started making our own.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, too. I mean, you listen to music, you realize how short a 3-minute song is when you're animating for 5 hours,
That's probably why some of the people that listen to our podcast, they're like, we want longer podcasts, because that way you can just keep listening to it. And you always get, you know, some kind of tips. It's always nice to hear because everybody does things differently. So it's nice to hear each person's perspective on what they do and how they do things. And it's always fun to listen to and
yeah.
get tips.
But yeah, it's just funny though, because especially if you're animating, it's hard to watch a television show or anything. You know, your eyes and ears still have to be, you know, focused elsewhere, but you can only split your attention so thin.
Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think in one of your videos you used some clay. It was for when the ladder moved and the person fell through the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
So you use clay to stick things onto your minifigures or sets or to assist you. Do you have any other things in your little toolbox that you might be able to pass on to our audience?
Well, I guess the honest truth is I'm probably about as primitive as it gets for Lego people. You know, I use clay for things. I guess, like I said, I have a friend that's been doing some animation recently as well. And, he has a difficult time using the clay. I don't know if it's just the difference in, like, our the moisture in our hands or something. But the clay is tacky but not, like, sticky. Like, for if there's a weird balance shot, like the pizza delivery guy holding the pizza out front, sometimes he doesn't want to balance on the pegs right because the weight's out front.
Mm-hmm.
So the clay is enough to anchor him and get him in position. If you're running on a smooth floor, you know, sometimes you need clay as well to get him. Like if you're running across the street and there's mm-hmm. no pegs. So clay is used as an assistance for that. If I do masking, I have a couple of clear – I guess I don't know how to describe it, but they're – it has a little base plate. It's a thin tube, and then on the end is like a peg.
Mm-hmm.
I have a couple clear ones of those I use for the masking, just to reduce the shadows and stuff. But then I'll clay the minifigure onto the support, just so I can get them held in place. But so there's a lot of clay for basic things. I recently started hot gluing hair on heads, so that if a character turns, they don't slide differently.
Okay, I've put putty tack under there, but that would work better too.
Because I'll do a tiny dab of hot glue, and then if I need to change expressions, usually it's a different hairpiece entirely. Like I'll have one glued head, and then the matching hair, and I'll change the face underneath that one. And I guess a great example would be Tim and Ralph. Every time it's just the same, you know, their normal faces. That's been the same head throughout. But every time there's a reaction, you know, obviously that's a different head, and that's a matching hairpiece that's different. Then the other thing too is, again, Tim and Ralph, I've made 15 videos with them already, so they do wear down a little, like their arms get loose, that sort of thing. So I do sometimes use stunt doubles, like if there's a shot with clay, I don't want to clay up the good pair of legs.
Oh, okay.
So sometimes I use different things. But I mean, obviously that's, you know, case by case. Like I said, my videos aren't necessarily the best. You do see dust and imperfections a lot of time, but if I can control it, I will. But so the Tim and Ralph, I've got, you know, I made sure when I started the series that I had about five of each just in case it continued. I didn't want to just like get in a situation where the minifigures were old and worn out.
Right.
Yeah, I've got that problem with my gorilla.
There's minor things like that. Like I said, for masking is the only real special effect. I kind of limit that. I also try to, I guess I don't know what other people do. That's another thing is with the sets. Normally what I do is I have the sets all built on a table. I slide the set to the edge, and then I use these like quick grip construction clamps to hold it down. That way the set doesn't slide around.
Okay, I think David Pagano does that.
And then the other thing is if you flip the clamps upwards so that the long part is, you know, going up instead of like down into the ground, you can put supports up against those to either hide your reflections or sometimes bounce more light into the set.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I mean, a lot of people use like, you know, lamps that you can move and bend around. My experience is whenever I've used lamps, I've had lighting consistency issues because every angle, the lamps are in a different spot. So like for me, I just have it's LED now, but I just have an LED light in the ceiling. And that's it. You know, I'll bounce more light up in, but other than that, it's more of just like a daylight, like the sun's coming down from above. I guess the only other tips and tricks I have is, say for when a minifigure's walking, specifically when there's a couple, if you got a couple people walking through and you look at them and their legs are together, you're like, was it the left leg or the right leg that's going to go next? You know, sometimes you'll have like a guy walking instead of left, right, you'll just do like left, like as a mistake.
Been there, done it.
Yeah. But so I always have like a little, I guess just think of like a pencil, you know, one end's a point, one end's not. So I'll have that sitting there. So then I'll flip it when the guy walks, if that makes sense.
That's a great
total
idea.
Sense. I have a pencil. I might put a piece of Lego on either side, but just the direction the pencil pointing. That works great.
I'll do a long flat, like, you know, like a 1x8 flat piece, and on the end I'll put like a stud, and so it'll just be somewhere on the table off the set, and then I'll, you know, the piece will indicate what leg is moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
So like if the character goes and puts his legs together and the left leg's coming forward, I'll flip the piece so that the stud's on his left.
Mm-hmm.
So you can walk away and come back and go, oh, left leg.
That's mm-hmm. a great idea.
But so there's little things like that. And if you're, I don't use the, I guess what you'd call onion skinning on when I animate.
Mm-hmm.
So I just take pictures. And if I need to reference the old material, I just go look up the pictures and do a frame by frame comparison. But
what are you frame capturing with?
Well, I use a Canon brand camera. I recently changed because I had issues with an old one. I was using a T3. I forget there's a couple different names for it, but I was using a Canon Rebel T3.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the one I took like 250,000 pictures with, and the aperture started sticking. So mm-hmm. I was getting light flicker caused by the camera frames being slightly different exposure every time. So wow. I had to bag that one, and then I think I got a T5.
That's what we have.
So it's a Canon camera. I've got the manual lens, and then I actually have these—I don't know what you'd call them—like a macro ring. Mm-hmm. It's a ring that goes between the lens and the body, and is a spacer.
Oh, okay.
It allows you to focus closer.
Oh, okay. So it's not like, on the outside of the lens.
It's on the camera side of the
okay,
lens.
I've never put anything there. I've got a couple macro lenses for zoom and for wide angle, but so there's something
I had those for an older Canon, and I guess that's sort of the evolution of how the angles have gotten better over time. Is just it's usually like the old videos, for example, they were all at capacity. That was as good as I could get them with the junky cheap camera I had, and eventually the angles got better because I could get closer, I could get lower. But so I use these spacer rings. So without it, for example, the kit lens, you know, you can only focus, say, 20 inches away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, zoom in as much as you want. You can't get the camera closer than 20 inches, which is a problem for if you want the car or an inside the car shot or, right. you know, things of that nature where you need the camera close. But so if you pop those rings in, you can, you know, almost touch the guy to the lens and still focus.
Wow.
I'm going to have to look for them as rings. That's one of my complaints about the DSLRs. Is
well, see, around me, the camera shop's known as Dodd Camera, DODD.
Mm-hmm.
So I just went in there and I was like, listen, I'm into a specific kind of photography. How can you help me out? And he's like, oh, you need these.
Okay.
So I had never heard of it because I'm not a photographer, and I don't know how many people use them animation-wise, but again, I'm not that, you know, connected with the community in general. So it was a really nice find, and that's, you know, I guess another trick for me.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like that's going to be very helpful to a lot of people. That's awesome.
What's interesting, a lot of animators occasionally, even though they're typically using a DSLR camera, will bring out a webcam on certain shots just because you can do certain
close-ups
or get that camera into certain places. So there's some options there.
Not to talk over you again, but...
No worries.
The other thing is, I guess I didn't answer your question. I use the Canon camera, and then it's a there's a provided utility that comes with it. It's like Canon EOS utility.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a tethering software. I'm sure it's basic, but once again, I don't know what's out there. I just know with what I work with, and I know that very well. But so it makes it control like a webcam. You do full control through your PC interface. The main thing is focusing and locking in all your manual settings.
Yeah.
But so I use that EOS utility. It does have an option for onion skinning, but it's sort of a manual case to case. Like you have to layer the picture yourself. It's not just automatically the previous. But for me, I'm used to it by now. I don't need the onion skin for reference. I think that's more of just a clutter.
Okay.
But so I take the pictures there, and like I said, if I need to reference them, it's on the computer. The camera's not going anywhere, so I just go off to the side, open the window, and look at my pictures.
There you go. Well, I wish they were a sponsor of us, but they're not. But I'm a real fan of the Dragon Frame software. And I don't use the onion skinning in it. I use something, I don't know what they call it in, but I do a loop last frame. So when I'm animating, it bounces between my last frame and the frame I'm on. And what it's okay. really nice for is if I accidentally bump something in the background, it's yeah. going to start jiggling in the background. And mm-hmm. I can catch that where sometimes even with onion skinning, you can't really see a subtle blur. But with the loop last frame, it like jiggles in the background and you're able to catch that. Sadly,
you're right.
That'd
be helpful.
Yeah. Dragon Frame is it's wonderful software. It talks to your camera lovely. It works great. Mm-hmm. So look into it. You might dig it.
Yeah.
So have you ever met or worked with any other brick filmers?
Brick filmers, no. Okay. And once again, it's more of the, I guess I've worked, like, there was a video I did with Guava Juice is another YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
We did a collaboration, but it was hard to do a collaboration outside of the Lego realm. It turned into me making a video for his channel and then having a video on my channel. So I made two channels, but one went on his channel and was more of a, exposure type thing than a collaboration.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, I've worked with other people, but not specifically animators. And, it always comes down to, it seems really nice, but then when it comes down to it, I'm not too sure how well it would be.
Yeah.
Because if you're doing a video with a set character, you have to make sure you each have the same minifigure or something like that to make sure it's, the footage is continuous.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just fun, for people to
I have
to work.
Not, so I guess I can't really talk on the, how easy or nice it is. Obviously, I'm open to it, but right. at the same time, I'm a little skeptical just due to the, just practicality of it.
Yeah. Right. Our location doesn't really allow for us to do that either. Yeah. But I think just from what we've seen and heard from other people, it's beneficial just because you get to see how certain people do things. You're like, oh, that's a good idea. Seeing them do that. It kind of just gives you more ideas on how to do things. It's cool to get, different perspectives from people.
There's a great group of guys in Southern California that have all been working with each other, and it's like every time they work with each other, they keep getting better because they're just learning off of each other. And I don't have that opportunity here. Not many folks around in my area that are brick filming. There's a few in the state, but if you get the opportunity, it's a good learning experience.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing is for me, like the way I just spoke about. I guess the only way I'd work with someone would be internet based. So. Mm-hmm. That would be the biggest complication.
Well, if you need a voice actress, Kim is a wonderful female voice actress.
I'm just a female.
She's a great male voice actor. Isn't that what we just discussed about your embarrassing old work?
Yeah, right. Well,
she does good females.
I think this came up in our last podcast, but when we first started, there were not really any females in brick filming. So so many people wanted me to voice for them, and someone in particular even had me voice his male parts, which I don't know why he did. They didn't ask Dave, but I found that kind of funny. But yeah, so back in the day, I was kind of it's like take what you can get. You got an adult, and she's a female. boom.
Yeah, no, but it's funny because like even for me, my videos don't have that many voices, and historically I did them all, and I'd try to like pitch bend or change my voice each time, and. You think you do such a good job, and then you go back 6 months later, and you're like, that was terrible.
Yeah.
But so, recently what I've done is if I need a specific voice, I've gone to websites like Fiverr, where there's, people for hire. They'll say, hey, for $5, I can do a commercial voice of this many words, and, there's different sites where you can get talent like that for, on the cheap.
Well, in the brick filming community, you have a lot of people that'd be happy to do it for free, so if money's ever an issue, you got friends here, so.
Excellent.
Something else I'll bring up in your thank you video, and I don't know how many suggestions you've had, because you said, what do you want to see? Do you want me to do tutorials behind the scenes? It seems like your fan base, really like the videos that you upload, so I think it's great for you to keep, dedicating your work to them. Mm-hmm. That's what's working for you. For brick filming, I know brick filmers love to see behind the scenes and get tutorials on how to do things. But, you don't want it to hurt your channel. Now, I don't know if you get if you're able to get paid for anything on your alt channel, that to me is what alt channels, your old channel, yeah. That's where you put your tutorials and behind the scenes, because those are really always enjoyable to see.
Well, see, the old channel, I mean, I'm not going to delete it or, you know, there's old videos on there I'm not proud of, whatever. That's just going to stay how it is. I don't think I'm ever going to go back to that. But yeah, the whole deal is that because the way YouTube works now, if you put out a video that's not that well received, it's a negative across the board. You know, it hurts your exposure.
Right.
Wow. So I don't want to put out smaller videos, or say someone subscribed and they're not interested in those.
Exactly.
You know, I don't want to chase people away. So the deal is in the next month or so, I would say, I'm going to open up a second channel and do that for, you know, smaller content, more behind the scenes, you know, obviously less production value, but that's sort of the beauty to it. Well, so it'll be the main page will be as normal, where it's just the, you know, feature stop motions. And then a second one will be more exposure to the behind the scenes, more candid talk to the camera type stuff.
And that's a great idea.
I definitely want to do it. It's just a matter of, you know, coming up with regular content, or, you know, just making the move to make a new channel.
Yeah, no, I think that's perfect. I couldn't agree with that more. I think that pleases everybody.
And it's good too, because like I said, the financial aspect isn't what it once was. So even, you know, even making a dollar off of each of these side projects, that's a dollar I didn't have before. And that's a video that wasn't out there before. So it's a win-win.
Right. Definitely don't do anything that hurts your main channel, because that's working for you. And you just need to keep doing that. I mean, hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Right.
Well, unlike most folks, you have to worry about your brand.
Right.
It's very important to, keep that, rolling the right direction. Okay.
Well, I mean, we've covered everything. I mean, you have been great and
wonderful.
Yeah, talking about everything that you've done and the stories and a lot of great tips. And we appreciate you spending the time with us.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys contacting me. And it's, you know, it's good to reach out. Like I said, I'm not really that involved, but hopefully that changes, you know, over the next year or so at least.
Well, we're glad to have you on in our community, or at least here on our website, just visiting and hopefully listening to our podcast. And we'll keep sharing your material as appropriate on our various blogs.
Yeah, definitely wish you all the best, continued success. And like I said, if you ever need free voices, though, you know, to me, hey, if you can get it for free, better to save money where you can, so...
It's been an interesting journey, and it's funny because I kept you know, thinking of milestones I'd hit. Like when I started, I'm like, oh man, it'd be so cool if I'd make, you know, if I'd make a dollar a day, if I'd get 1,000 views a month, if you know, there's different things all along the way. And all of a sudden, the next milestones seem so daunting and large, but I never thought I'd get this far, so I'm not too sure.
Yeah, but you've probably already blown everything out of the water, what you had expected. So everything's now like icing on the cake now.
Yeah, I never thought I'd get to 1 million subscribers, and, you know, I obviously thought I'd never hit 1 billion views. I'm not there yet, but that's probably the next milestone. And I always joke around with people, because I said, hey, they're like, oh, no, you thought it'd be big. I'm like, no, I didn't, because I put my name on it, you know, that's terrible branding. But it's funny, because you try to think of, like, a rebrand, and it's kind of like too little, too late, and at the same time, all the good names are taken, and... Why bother if the brand is working?
Your name is your brand.
No, I know. No, but it is kind of cool to become, you know, to develop not into celebrity status, but it is cool to have your name become widespread. And, you know, to emphasize that, you know, I try to put my name on an opening credits just to make sure that it's out there. And if my video gets pirated somewhere, it's at least still showing me credit.
Right. I think that's awesome.
I mean, there's plenty of people that still do that, unfortunately. You know, they just take the video and assume it's their own. But, you know, it's hard to hide a certain style, and it's hard to hide my name when it's in the text.
There you go.
We've had that issue as well. And, you know, sometimes the network that you work with will, you know, they're pretty good at catching that. So,
yeah.
But when you have the big brick films that really take off, you just need to start looking yourself and see who else has done it. And, you know, YouTube is really good about once you know, file a report. Like you said, even when they say they flag it for maybe having inappropriate content, it takes 2 seconds just to fill out that form and get it cleared up. They're really good about fixing that.
Yeah. No, and it's funny too, because, you know, not to go on a tangent when we're wrapping up, but, you know, starting out, I would always search for the content that was out there. like, I'm like, I've got an idea for a golf video. And I'd look and I can't find a Lego golf video. Good. I'm going to make one, you know? So back in the day, I tried to make stories that were unique, or if I wrote a golf video and then saw there were golf videos, I'm like, ah, it's gonna be too similar. I'm gonna try to do something different. And YouTube has kind of gone into more, you know, clickbait, sensationalized, you know, trendy type things. I'm trying to ignore that, but at the same time, you know, I just did a Fortnite video, so I guess that's sort of, you know, admitting that I'm not pure to my words.
Yeah.
But so, you know, I try to be unique. I try to do my own thing, and, you know, it's good to develop that.
Well, and it works, you know, so.
Well, definitely, when me watching all those videos, I've definitely become a fan of your work. I really appreciate what you put into it, and your style, and the humor. It's fun.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, going back to the beginning, it's not so much the animation, it's not so much the story, it's just trying to find a good version that works on both levels.
Exactly.
I'm just curious, how much do you work? I mean, do you work like 5 days a week, or do you try?
I try to work every day, but, you know, obviously I'm not going to, if you worked 8 hours a day just doing this, you know, you'd probably go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain aspects I need to step up, like, obviously my website's very obsolete. You know, I don't have an online presence for, you know, social media that it should be. So there's other things I should be diluting my time with. But at the end of the day, it's all about the content and what's out there that's viewable. No one's going to be a fan of me on Facebook first and then find my videos second. So, you know, you gotta keep those core videos working away, and, you know, just hope that they're received very well.
Well, they are. So, I mean, like I said, the proof is in the pudding. So keep doing what you're doing, Michael. Don't let anybody, you know, steer you away from what has worked for you. So.
Yeah, so I've stepped up production, but, you know, one a week is very difficult to do. One every 2 weeks is, you know, I think about the going rate, so we'll see what the future holds. But I mean, the I feel bad for you having to watch all that content recently, because there's a lot of it.
I enjoyed it. It gave me something to do while they're sleeping, and I'm an early morning person, so it gave me something to do.
Yeah. Okay. I'm sure your viewership alone will pop up in my analytics, because that's a lot of content.
I didn't actually watch it from a logged in account. I watched it using my Roku device playing YouTube, so I got to watch it on a 50-inch TV, which was really nice to watch. But I don't log in from that, so it's just like an anonymous account or whatever. Most of those views, a few of them we watched on the computer, but most of them came through my Roku.
I always tease people, because like, oh, I'll show my kids and we'll watch it together. I'm like, no, get your own device so I can get 5 views for 5 people.
And I try to watch the ads, unless they're like those 5 minute ads. If it's under 30 seconds, I just kind of chill out for a minute and let the ads roll, because if it's a brick film, I want my brick filming buddies to get some revenue.
No, and I appreciate that, and at the same time, you know, I'm not allowed to advocate it. So,
yeah. Well, he might have gotten you like a cup of coffee.
I don't watch my own ads, because I know, you know. But and when it's another brick filmer, I'm not encouraging for any of the Four Monkeys stuff. But watch everybody's ads. It's good for everybody, and you might actually find a product you want to buy.
True.
And
it's funny too, because the more you know about YouTube and how ads work, you know, like if the not only does the host of the ad make a lot of money, but the advertiser also loses a lot of money, you know, spending on that ad.
Yeah.
So it's really funny, because if I see an ad like politically I disagree with, I'm like, ooh, I'm gonna let this one play out. They're gonna pay for it.
That's funny.
So it's always funny. It's just the more you know, the more you can have fun with it. So you know, advertising for me, it's funny, because we'll put a YouTube video up on the, you know, we'll Chromecast it to the living room television. And an ad will come on, the room will groan, and I'll stand up and cheer. So I'm like, hey, it's my livelihood, so.
That's right.
Excellent.
Gotta appreciate it.
It's a good problem to have. I'll wait
Definitely.
Through that.
Yeah.
Well, we are going to look forward to seeing the new Tim and Ralph that you have coming out and everything else that you do.
Yep, and like I said, there's going to be 5 new Tim and Ralph starting this Friday, which I believe would be the 13th of July.
This will come out a little after it.
I'm sure by the time this gets out, you know, those will be resurfacing. But I'm hoping this is the resurgence of Tim and Ralph, and I hope to bring them back in the future.
Well, they're fun characters. I look forward to watching them.
And if you ever have anything else that you got coming up and you want to come back and talk to us, we're always happy to talk to you and help you out with whatever we can.
First conversation of many. Sounds good.
Awesome.
Well, we appreciate it, and hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
I will. You too.
All right.
Thanks.
Thank you.
We'll make sure everybody has the links to all of your great work. So you keep enjoying and doing what you're doing because it works.
Yep. Thank you for your support.
All right. Thanks, Michael. Appreciate it.
Yep. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much to Michael for spending so much time with us, and thanks to everyone who stuck with us through this entire podcast. Please check out our sponsors and partners on the Brick Filmers Guild homepage, and don't forget to check out Michael's amazing brick films on his YouTube channel. We want to give a huge thank you to our Patreon supporters, Spug is Due, Something's Awry Productions, Frame 5 Studios, Dude Brick, Mind Game Studios, Dark Dragon Films, Forest Fire 101, Sanjira, Spencer Katz, and Paganimation. Thank you so much for supporting our podcast. You guys really inspire us to keep creating more of these in-depth conversations with the world's great brick filmers. If you would like to sponsor one of our podcasts, please contact me through one of our social media sites. We would like to thank Kevin MacLeod for his wonderful music, which we use for our podcasts and in our brick films. If you're listening to this podcast on iTunes, please rate and comment. We'd really appreciate that. So, until next time, bye y'all!